Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Final hour here on this Thursday on a best of the Steve Jones Show. Matt Catrillo here with you. Steve, on vacation this week, but as always in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, great selection of pre-owned inventory, great service department and sales staff. And it's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com, home of the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. So we are looking back at the 10th anniversary of the show, which we celebrated back in February with lots of different mystery guests calling in. So far, we've replayed Penn State men's basketball coach Micah Shrewsbury, Kenny Albert of Fox Sports and TNT and many others. And now we go to mystery guest number three that joined us a few months ago.
So for the final time this week, a mystery guest. So,
what do you want to hint? I'm fresh off the golf course in Clearwater, Florida, and this is Wheels from Bluebell.
Well, I was just telling the story the other day about the stout kickoff.
Yeah, that was funny. That was funny when you said that. That made me laugh, I'll tell you.
But that's that's because I think the world of you. That's for one thing. But that's, you get to the point when you do this, how relaxed you are.
Yeah.
So you're relaxed enough to say something like that because you're like, headed toward Wheels' house.
Well, you've always had him kicking a football from to some ridiculous distances and places. So why not my condo over here? Good.
I mean, look, when we were in Madison, I had him kicking it to Appleton. Okay, so when Michigan State, I had him kicking at the Grand Rapids. It was only appropriate I had you in there. So,
hey, next year you may have to talk about some kickoff returns for the first time in a few years.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I may have to brush up on that. remember how to do that.
All right,
It's been a while. All right, so this is what I'm really so thrilled you're on because there's so many things I want to talk to you about. All right, so you got some time here?
Oh, I'm retired.
a lot of people were hoping I'd be. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm retired and enjoying myself down here in Florida, so I got all the time in the world for you.
Perfect. So let's start with this. You endured, 81. You endured, 85 briefly, 94, 95, and others. Along the way, you endured all that.
All of them.
When you see how it's playing out right now, what runs through your mind because you have lived through it and it's affected your livelihood?
Well, the number one thing that runs through my mind is how that it ticks the fans off, and that's the last thing you want to do in your business, as you know, Steve. You don't want your fans upset at you, and this thing, because they don't care. They don't care what the issues are. They just want to see the games, and want to see the owners and the players, get down to business and get it over with and play. But the worst thing is, obviously I was on the ownership side for so long, and they have their issues. But the players, it's a lot of times it's different guys. They haven't been through this stuff, and they really don't understand the ramifications of it. And what you're dealing with right now is a whole new generation, complete with the union leadership, that it's totally different. It's totally different. They haven't got to go through this yet, and they don't understand how serious it is. And all of a sudden, the clock starts ticking, and you're getting close to these deadlines, and you're not getting anything done. Like they turn down the mediation. Well, I wasn't surprised about that. So
right.
It's just it's unfortunate. It's un- and the other thing is, you know, players don't get paid until the season starts. So, you know, and they don't half of them don't like spring training anyway. You know, they don't want to be down here for 6 weeks. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's no urgency, unfortunately.
Great points. And here's a point I've made on the show, regardless of the sport. There's a triangle that makes sports work. You need owners. I mean, you need money. Okay? You need players. They're the centerpiece of what the owners are investing in. But the third part of the triangle is the part that's always left out that you brought up. It's the fans. None of this happens without them. They're the ones that subscribe to Cape. They're the ones that buy tickets. They're the ones that buy merchandise.
Yeah, and it, believe me, ownership thinks about it more than the players do. The players are the players. They have their, you know, they all think the owners are so wealthy and that they should be making more money, and like any employee does. But the real world does not want to hear about these kind of hissing contests between people making a lot of money and then the owners, who of course are multimillionaires for the most part. Not all players make a lot of money, and now a lot of this is what this mm-hmm. is about service time and trying to get guys to make more money when they're younger, because the last negotiation it actually did take the average salaries down for the last 2 years. So I think that's what they're playing off right now. And if anybody were to sit down and try and explain the issues to people, you'd glaze over in about 2 minutes. You know,
right,
it would
exactly.
get so boring trying to listen to it.
Oh, exactly. Exactly right. I know the fans in Pittsburgh were hoping that there'd be a cap because the cap would mean a floor. And I guess the owners proposed a $100 million floor. And the players rejected it because they said, if you want a floor, that means you want a cap. We said no. They said no. It's interesting. I mean, the way this is. And you're right. And fans will glaze over in a second, like, oh, God, it's millionaires.
Oh, yeah, they
don't
want to hear it. And you know, Steve, people, I went through all eight of them, or eight, seven, eight, nine, whatever they are. The first one, I think, was 71 or 72. So, but the number one issue, you know, I used to get it all the time when I go out. How come you guys don't have a salary cap? And I said, well, what the heck do you think all those labor stoppages were about? Right. They weren't able to do it. They kept losing in court, or they would beat themselves. The owners would beat themselves, and Marvin Miller and Don Fear beat them like a drum in those days. Yeah. So there's no salary cap. So sure, would you like to have a salary cap? Yeah. Will the players ever go anywhere near a salary cap in baseball? No chance.
No chance. Now let's talk about what we do. And it was interesting that I was interviewed yesterday, and the interviewer asked me about, you know, positivity, negativity, and so forth. And I said, look, I said, you got to understand, over time, you develop relationships with people. I said, is it your goal in a relationship or a friendship or whatever? I said, I'm sorry, you can't avoid it. You end up, you can't keep putting up the wall. There's one person on the face of the earth I thought about as I was saying this, was that you and I have walked this parallel deal along the way where Charlie Manuel trusted you to talk about stuff that would never see the light of day. I mean, you don't think James or Micah or what, or I'm standing there seeing it, that doesn't make the light of day? Of course not, because that's not how it goes.
Yeah.
It's not realistic.
Well, there's absolutely, you know, you and I have talked about this over the years because of what we do and what I did. I mean, what you still do and what I did for so many years. And I did pregame shows with managers for a long, long time. And the first thing that you find out is that they will decide whether or not they're going to trust you or not. And
yes,
you can't make that happen. And after a period of time, they'll trust you. And as you know, the greatest thing about them telling you things is not that you'll use them, but they'll lead you in the right direction so you don't go off half-cocked on something.
Exactly.
And I always felt that that was the best part of it.
Exactly. In other words, it's that kind of, quote, deep background material that keeps you from doing something stupid.
Yes.
This has always been the theory I've had about this. Chris Wheeler knows a ton about broadcasting and how the nuts and bolts of broadcasting works. I think I'm in the same category. the head football coach, the head basketball coach, or the baseball manager know exponentially more about football, basketball, and baseball than I do, even though I think I know a lot. But they know way more, but I know more about the broadcasting of it.
Absolutely, and that's the whole thing about when you're doing that, is you're doing an interview that you're taping for the most part. So if something goes horribly wrong, you can fix it. But for the most part, you're doing something that you don't want to touch. That when it's over, it's over, and you've gotten in the Steve, the hardest thing. And you go through it with James, and you went through it with Joe, and I went through it because we would do it daily almost.
Yeah.
Where something would happen the night before, and then when talk radio came along, they'd be blabbing about it all day. And now you can't do a pregame show with the manager that night and not ask him about that situation that occurred the night before and why he did it and what he was thinking. Now, you don't have to beat him up about it because you're not a talk show host. But you need, I can't begin to tell you how many times I would look at a guy and say, look, this happened last night. It's all over the place. We got to go into this. No, and 9 times out of 10, they look at you and say, no problem. Once in a while, they go, well, we got to be careful with this. And then we would figure out what we were going to do.
Every time I've been in that spot, I've done the same thing. I said, I have to bring this up. And you know what I've always had? I know you'll ask it the right way. Right. It's all how you ask it, because the key to asking it is that you do it in such a way that just allows them to say whatever they want to say about it.
Well, I think you just brought up one of the best points because it's a lost art nowadays, and I hear you how you do interviews, and I've known you for so long, and you teach classes and all, but people don't ask questions when they do interviews now. They make a 2-minute statement. They'll make a 2-minute statement, and then what's the guy going to say? Yeah, right. I did that one time with Jim Fregosi. Jim Fregosi looked at me with those glasses down over his nose, and I mean, he could give you some looks. He looked at me and he said, "When I'm taping the show," and he goes, "Well, Mr. Wheeler," he said, "that was a really brilliant point you just made. Now, would you like to ask me a question?" So I looked at him. I stopped the tape. I said, "All right, Jimmy, we'll." But that's the point. It drives me crazy when big time network people and all too, they just throw out a statement, and then the guy's supposed, "Yeah, well, that's right." No, ask a question. And I would hope that everybody that tries to teach journalism nowadays and broadcasting and interview techniques is ask a question and don't make a statement, because nobody's on listening to the interview to hear how smart you are.
Well, I always tell them ask what and why questions.
Yeah, that's good.
Instead of, in other words, don't make a statement, but don't ask a yes or no question either.
Yep.
Ask a what or a why question. That way it gives them a chance to answer. And the bottom line is, you don't have to sit there. Just ask the question. You don't have to prove how smart you are. You're already sitting there.
Right. That's really well put. I never quite thought of it that way, but that's probably the way that I did it. We all make mistakes, and
you did
every once in a while you'll tick the guy off. But what are you going to do?
But you did hundreds of these, and I'll bet on hundreds of these. 95% of the time, you ask what or why questions, and maybe out of fatigue, 5% of the time didn't.
That's so true. And the other thing was, well, you mentioned Charlie. Well, Charlie had a tendency to drop a cuss word or two in there. He didn't have a real good filter. So I would just let it go. And he'd finish the show, and he'd say, "How was that one today, Wheels? Oh, all right." And I'm thinking, oh, man, I got to call Jim Jackson and do about 4 edits. I'd say, "Chuck, that was outstanding. No problem. I'll see you later. Good luck tonight." And I'm walking out of his office going, "Oh, boy, do we have to fix that baby up." Because we got to get the hells and the dams out of there. So that would be one of those things with Chuck that you always knew, not always, but you knew you were going to have to fix them sometimes. But he was so honest. He had a great word a player got a little bit flustered. Well, that was a combination of two words, and everybody knew what he meant.
Like it's like
strategery.
It's like strategery. All right. So.
Yeah, right.
What the heck are you talking
Charlie
about?
Charlie had his own language.
Oh my. Well, but here's another element too: the recorder's off. Okay, and you've developed a good rapport. You've developed a good rapport. Sometimes you're one of the few people they can talk to.
Yep. And that, Steve, I can't begin to tell you how many times I had a manager call me their personal shrink. And you know, we would. I may have spent 45 minutes in that office with the guy for a 5-minute show. Mm-hmm. But we would talk about so many things, and then we do the show, and then we talk about more things afterwards. And as you brought up at the beginning of this conversation, is when they trust you, they need to bounce some stuff off you that they can't bounce off anybody else maybe at that particular time. So they really look forward to you coming in there at that time. And I could always tell when it was going to be one of those days where I might be there. And then, of course, then they look at you and say, get out of here. I don't have any more time for you. Like, get out of here. And you're thinking, well, you know, I sat in here all this time with you because you wanted to talk. And it always made me feel better when they would say that to you later on. Hey, I do appreciate that you act as a shrink for me. And I always enjoyed it, too.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I'm talking like every coach I've been with, every one of them has always been, hey, you know, they'll talk to you for a little bit. Right? Because there's some things they need to get off. Either they have a question about something, not about anything I'm doing, but like they may have a question about something, or they may have, or they want to get something out there. You can't believe how things are going with X out there. Oh my goodness! Right? One of the coaches one time said to me, he says, "It would really help our cause if he knew the plays."
Yeah, that would that'd be like saying it's the catcher boy. Nice, you put the right fingers down once in a while.
I'll text you the name of the player, by the way. Okay, I will.
Well, we had a catcher one time that one of our pitchers used to think he could clean both ears with one Q-tip. You know, so that was not a good thing when you had a catcher like that. That just he couldn't remember what fingers to put down or they wanted to put first sign after two and he would never put a two down. So the pitcher would be going crazy. Like, I'm looking for a two and I'm looking for the next sign after that. The other thing about managers and you do it with coaches and all is sometimes they'll say something when you're in one of those off the record sessions that is on the record that you can use in the interview you're going to do. Right. And I always thought it was good to be a good listener too.
Oh, Wheels, that's the whole name of the game in doing interviews. Ask what and why questions and then listen. Don't be thinking, and I tell my students, I texted you the name, by the way.
Oh, all right, I'll check it out later.
You got to check out.
I'm afraid I'll hang up on you.
Right? But I tell them, ask what or why questions. I said, but don't get married to all the questions you have. Listen to what they're saying. They may take the interview in a direction that's better for the audience.
So well done. I mean, that's perfect. The one thing you don't ever want to do when you're doing an interview is write down your questions.
Oh,
if you can avoid it. Because you won't listen.
Did you ever?
You won't be listening.
No. Have you ever written down?
No, I never.
Neither have I.
No.
I've never written down a single question.
No.
Never.
Because you need to play off, as you said, you need to play off the manager in our case or the player and not have a whole list of questions in front of you. You know, that I've got to work these in, because the odds are he will answer that question and then you'll repeat the thing. And you really sound foolish, like you're not paying attention.
Yeah. I've never written down a question for a sports interview. Never. You got to have a feel for the game to begin with. So, I mean, that's why you're sitting there. They think you have a feel for the game to start with.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and look, not everybody that they have interview sessions with are inside baseball, inside football, inside basketball people. They're just sometimes they're just professional broadcasters who are doing the best they could do. Luckily, in our cases, I was a pretty good inside baseball guy, and you obviously are a very good inside football, basketball guy, and probably other things that you do too. So that really helps that they know that. And that they can talk to you on a certain level, and that way you're able to really able to share things with your listeners. And let's face it, the number one thing you're doing there is that's not in for you, that interview, or for him, that is to try and entertain the audience that's going to listen to it later and help them learn something.
It means so much to me that you called in today. As soon as I heard the voice, I said, I got 1,000 things I need to talk to this guy about. All right.
By the way, pretty good recruiting class, huh?
The recruiting class is, I'll tell you, I have not watched the 9 that are here yet. I'm going to probably go to a workout in maybe 2 or 3 weeks to start getting a gauge on the 9 kids that are here. But they think 23 could be an even better class. And if you can start stacking classes' wheels now, you're going in a great direction.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the day that when they put all the classes out that we're ahead of Ohio State. That gets so annoying, the way they keep recruiting as well as they do. But more power to them. They're terrific in what they're able to do.
I got a text from Stout. He wants his ball back. No, just kidding.
Well, it's out here on the first tee. I'll get it for him.
You are one of the greatest things over the years is the friendship that we have. I think the world of this guy, just like Philly fans, you thought the world of him. You'd think even higher of him if you knew him. So, Wheels, thanks so much, buddy. You're the greatest.
Thank you, Steve. Our friendship means a lot to me, too, and we'll keep in touch.
You bet.
All right.
Chris,
take care.
And there he is, Wheels, the former Phillies broadcaster, Penn State alumni himself. Always fun when him and Steve get together to make some radio. You never know what you're going to get out of the two of them, and that was a lot of fun to have him call. It was a while since we had touched base with Wheels, so it was good to have him back on the show to celebrate the 10th anniversary of this show, so thanks again to him. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. The Sunbury Motors guarantee always there. We'll play another mystery guest coming up in the final half hour as we continue here on a best of the Steve Jones Show, looking back at the 10th anniversary here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Final half hour on this Thursday. Matt Catrillo here with you. It is a best of the Steve Jones Show. Steve enjoying some vacation this week up in Cape Cod, joining some time with the family and the grandkids. And he'll be back next week with some more live shows. And when he does, he'll be in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, a great selection of pre-owned inventory, a great sales staff that whatever you choose, a brand-new car or a used car, they're there for you to make sure that you get the car you're looking for. They're not just there for the sale. And a service department that is there for you with whatever vehicle you choose, with the diagnostics, with the inspections, all the simple routine maintenance, they got you covered, all part of the Sunbury Motors guarantee. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. So again, we're recapping the 10th anniversary of the show, which we celebrated back in February. We had lots of mystery guests call in to surprise Steve. So far today, we've heard from Penn State men's basketball coach Micah Shrewsbury, Kenny Albert from Fox and TNT, Chris Wheeler, Wheels, former Phillies broadcaster. And now we go to our final mystery guest for the show.
I'm always used to introducing guests. The mystery guest thing, I'm still getting used to here, Matt. So,
well, he's here with us now.
Okay.
Right. Hi, this is Tim Kirkjian with ESPN.
Oh, my goodness.
Steve, a happy 10 years on the air. Good for you.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, for this, yeah. 40 years for basketball, 30 for football, and I'm fortunate to do this for 10. How have you been?
I've been okay. I'd be better if we start spring training in a couple weeks, but that looks pretty unlikely at this point. So, therefore, I'm not doing very well.
Yeah, and I understand that. Believe me. I mean, it's because last year with COVID and Big Ten football, they originally said that they were not going to play. Then it was going to be an abbreviated season, so I know what it's like to sit there in limbo wondering what's going to happen. So you and I have walked in the same shoes, maybe in a different way, but we have.
Yeah, well, the difference, though, is COVID prevented us from playing. And this
right.
time, we're not quite sure what is preventing us from playing. We all know this is all about money, and that's part of the problem. You know, they're not close on the minimum salary or the luxury tax. There are debates about how we're going to handle, you know, competitive balance, how you keep teams from, you know, rebuilding so often and so, you know, violently in its own way, you know, going down to a payroll that's lower than, say, Max Scherzer's making by himself. I mean, these are all the issues that have to be done. And I thought February 1st, we better have an agreement. And we're not even close, and it's February the 1st. So we have to hope now that we can really make some movement here in the next 2 weeks and get spring training started on time. But at this point, from the people that I've talked to, that's unlikely.
How difficult is it for you to cover this aspect of it, because you have such a passion for the game and the stories and the players? And how difficult, though, is it for you emotionally to cover this part of it, because it's not the fun part?
Yeah, it's certainly not the fun part. And, you know, I'd much rather talk to a left fielder than a lawyer. And that's what you have to do now when you cover labor. But I covered the 81 strike. Of course, I covered 94, 95, so I'm kind of used to this. But you never get used to not playing. And I just hope everyone on both sides recognizes how much damage could be done if part of spring training doesn't happen, if somehow we don't play 162 games this year. I mean, that's a really dangerous situation, and I'm just hoping that everyone recognizes how much money can be lost if you don't play. And let's face it, with football, which I don't even understand football, but I like to watch it, we just saw six great playoff games the last 2 weeks, and that's what people care about, is the playing of the game. And I hope baseball truly, truly recognizes that, and right now, I'm a little worried.
I want to ask you about the Hall of Fame since I've got you here. The Hall of Fame is going to be graced with Gil Hodges, Mitty Minoso, Buck O'Neill, among others, and of course, the one that was recently elected, David Ortiz. What did your ballot look like?
Well, I voted for 9 guys. I almost always vote for 10, but this year I voted for 9. I voted for David Ortiz, and I voted for Alex Rodriguez and, I'm not Alex Rodriguez, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, and I didn't vote for Alex Rodriguez or Manny Ramirez. So there were 5 guys with a connection to steroids and or PEDs in some way, and it's just really difficult these days to separate how you vote for these guys. So I voted for David Ortiz because I just don't think his PED violations are nearly as clear as some other guys. And then when you look at his record, you know, 10 All-Star games, 3 World Series championships, 541 homers, 931 OPS, 7 guys in history have both of those numbers. And, you know, his World Series play, especially postseason, has been unbelievable. It's 688 in the 2013 World Series when the rest of the Red Sox hit under 200. And you know, when you look at the all-time players on the Red Sox, Ted Williams is number one, and then you probably have to choose between David Ortiz and Carly Stremsky for number two. That's what kind of career David Ortiz had.
Absolutely. So who were the others that you did vote for that obviously didn't make it, but I just want to see what kind of traction they got?
Right. Well, I voted for those three, so Bonds, Clemens, and Ortiz. I voted for Schilling and Sheffield. I voted for Roland and Helton. And I voted for Jeff Kent and Billy Wagner. And of all those guys, Scott Roland is now at 63%. History tells us, unless you have a lot of PED baggage, which, of course, he has none, you get to 63%, especially with 4 years left on the ballot, you've got a real chance to make it. So I'm not sure Roland will make it next year, but I think eventually the writers will vote him in maybe 2 years from now.
I agree with all those. I mean, that's a rock-solid ballot. You know, the ones that didn't make it, that's a rock-solid ballot. When you sit down to vote, and you voted for 9, not 10, as you said, what's your personal criteria?
Well, the numbers are first, obviously. The era in which you played is important, durability, all that. And the character clause plays in it, and it's really difficult now with the PED situation. And it just seems to me that Bonds and Clemens played in an era where there was this tacit agreement in Major League Baseball that no one was checking, no one was testing, all sorts of players were doing it. And, you know, players were encouraged to do it in certain cases. Does that condone it? Does that make it right? No. But does that factor into the way that I look at things? Yes, it does. As opposed to 2005 on, when they are testing and you are getting punished and they are checking, I think those guys are in a different category than, say, Bonds and Clemens. Now, a lot of people disagree with me. I totally understand that. I'm just not sure there are any real right answers anymore when it comes to the PED questions, because it's all so confusing.
Tim, you just referenced the NFL postseason where every game was going down to the wire. Baseball went with the standard playoff look this past year because they didn't reach an agreement with the Players Association. I saw one proposal that had the owners at 14 and the players at 12. Now, I don't know how accurate that is, but it's something I read. How do you feel about expanded postseason, just as a general principle?
Well, I was all for it 2 years ago when we had a 60-game season and COVID dominated baseball, sadly. But I don't think we need expanded playoffs. And again, I'm way in the minority on this. I understand the money to be made. I understand more teams in the playoffs, more interest. I get it. But let's not forget, on the final day of the 2021 season, with only 10 playoff teams in there, it was an amazing final day of the season. And you're probably just not going to get that again if you have all those teams making the playoffs, meaning if Toronto and Seattle and all the teams that just missed out would have all made it, I think the drama of that final day would have gone away. And I think you better be careful what you wish for. But I think we'll go to 12. I don't think we'll go to 14. Can I live with 12? Of course I can. But I think keeping it at 10 is a good place, because I think the integrity of a 162-game season is really important. And winning your division is really important, and I don't think we should lose that.
I'll never forget the Red Sox faltering down the stretch, Tampa Bay getting in, an Orioles-Yankees deal at the end where they did the same thing because it was limited. Man, that made a dramatic last day, and I think Terry Francona ended up losing his job out of it.
Yeah, I was there in Baltimore that night, and I believe that was the greatest single season day night in the history of regular season baseball ever. And it was because just what you said, you lose and you go home. And if the Red Sox were in, whether they won that game or not, I'm just not sure it means the same thing. To repeat, if you're going to play 162 games, you really have to make it worth it, and you have to make the winner get a few advantages for winning in 162 games. You're not going to get the same advantages if there are, say, 14 playoff teams.
I think after 162, you sort of proved where you belonged, right?
I think. Sparky Anderson always used to say, that's why we play 162, because there are no excuses at the end. The season is so long, you can't ever say, hey, we ran out of time. No, 162 games is a great barometer, and I'd like to see him play 162 this year and just... I'd like to see 10 playoff teams, no more. But my guess is we'll have 12. I just hope we play as quickly as possible.
Hey, I'm with you all the way. And, Tim, I thank you so much for the valuable time you gave us today. It's awfully nice of you to be a part of this.
Well, thank you, Steve. I know your career is way longer than 10 years, way longer, but I was told that just we're celebrating 10 years today. So congratulations on that, okay?
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate you.
Okay, see ya.
And there he is, ESPN's Tim Kirchen. And another guy that's a really good friend of the show and always happy to join us and squeeze us in through his busy schedule throughout the course of the year, especially during baseball season. So it's always great to have Tim Kirchen on with us. And again, we thank him for joining us to celebrate 10 years of this show. Fun looking back on that today. And we'll get to do it again in tomorrow's show, the final show of our best of shows all this week. More mystery guests will replay coming up tomorrow, looking back at the 10th anniversary, so look forward to that. But today's show has been brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, great selection of pre-owned inventory, service department, sales staff, they're all there for you, all part of that Sunbury Motors guarantee. And it's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Thanks for joining us today here on this Best of the Steve Jones Show. We'll talk to you tomorrow, wrapping up the week, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.